The following was originally broadcast on Northumberland 89.7 FM. For more podcasts and learn more about us, go to northumberland897.ca. And thank you for downloading this podcast.
Welcome to our program, Aging, a New Reality, a show that provides insight into many of the concerns that seniors have during their journey in later years. We talk to experts who will share their knowledge on subjects such as finances, nutrition, housing, and health. On today's program, we will hear the second part of Madeline Corelli's interview with Gord Lay of the Lay Wealth Management Group in Coburg about the ins and outs of financial well-being, especially for those who are seniors or are approaching their senior years. Now, here's Madeline.
We're going to talk about estate planning. I know this is a topic of interest, and as you ended our conversation last time we spoke, you said, you know, you really should be thinking about spending your money while you're still alive and not thinking so much about the death part. But I'm going to take us back to the inevitable death part and say, okay, so how do I keep most of my assets from going to the government on my death?
That's the number one question I get all the time, Madeline. And there are a few strategies. However, there are some strategies that you want to be aware that may not serve you well. First of all, if you're married, you can leave all of your assets to your spouse tax-free or tax-sheltered, meaning that if you have a tax-free savings account, they should be named as the beneficiary and successor. And same with your registered plans, whether you have an RSP or a RIF, they should be named as beneficiaries. And of course, if you have a pension plan, your spouse should be named as the beneficiary there. If you have non-registered investments, you should have them registered jointly, if that makes sense. Now, sometimes in a second marriage, those kinds of options are not the first choice. But generally, that's when you're transferring assets from one spouse to another, it can be done through your estate tax-free and probate-free if it's all registered properly. So those are one of the first things that we talk about with clients when they become a new client, just to make sure that they have their estate affairs in place.
What happens if they're not married?
If they're not married, they could still, they're living common law. If they're living common law, the rules apply the same way.
If they're single.
Okay. So now that's where things can get a little bit complicated. So if you want to leave something to a beneficiary and they're not your spouse, you can do the same thing with your registered plan, your tax-free savings account. And the benefit of that is that there's no tax on the TFSA if it moves from one person to another. And there's no probate if you've named them as beneficiary and successor. With your registered plan, it's different. You can name them as the beneficiary, in which case they would inherit all of the proceeds from your RSP or your RIF, less the tax that is owing to the government, okay? But you do avoid probate. Now, probate in Ontario for estates that are over $50,000, the probate fee is about 1.5%. So that could add up. And so anything you could do to mitigate that, that would be wise. Now, there are some pitfalls there. Some people think, well, I want to leave everything to my children, okay? And they say, well, my spouse has passed away. I want to leave my non-registered assets, my house, my stock portfolio, my rental properties. I want to put their names on there. And that way, when I die, those assets are not subject to probate. Okay, that's true. You would save 1.5% of the value of those assets. However, what you're now putting those assets in at risk, because now those assets, because there has someone else's name on it, it becomes their property as well. So they could, in theory, take that money from you before you die. And if that's not a risk with your children, your child's spouse, if there was a marital breakdown, could have claim on some of those assets. Mm. So there are pitfalls.
that could potentially be a life-changing situation if you jointly owned all of your assets with someone, and they had the right to borrow off, borrow money or buy things with your assets prior to your death.
That's exactly right. And that's an excellent example. So if they were to claim bankruptcy, their creditors could go after some of your assets that you've put mm-hmm. in their name.
Mm-hmm. So how can you, if you don't want to, I mean, apart from signing everything over on your deathbed as you're about to go, how is there any other way of helping your beneficiary to not pay probate and taxes?
Yeah. One of the best ways for some people is to start giving them their inheritance before you die. Mm-hmm. And I think that's so long as you have some good planning, you don't give too much away. I think that has some real benefits. A, you're helping them out now when perhaps they need it the most. Mm-hmm. You are having the pleasure of seeing them benefit from that while you're still alive. So I think there's some really good ways of doing that, sharing that wealth while you're still alive. Now, what we've done for some clients is where a child needs money for the purchase of a house, for example, and they're buying it with their spouse. What we'll do is we'll set it up so that they have a demand loan. So I lend money to my daughter and her spouse, but it's a loan and it's a forgivable loan. So it's forgivable on my death or at any point down the road. And that way, should I die, that money's, they've been able to use it and there's no tax consequences. But if there's a marital breakdown and that spouse is leaving, I can call the loan and bring all that money back into the family without losing it. So there are some strategies along that way. So you can ensure that it gets to them in a tax efficient way and it gets to where you want it to be for the rest of your life.
That's interesting. So a demand loan, in just to make sure that you can get the money back should the beneficiary that you're the person that you're lending money to somehow have a reason to have to pay it back.
Yeah. If there's usually it's around a marital breakdown. The departing spouse doesn't take half of what you've given them.
Right. Right.
Now on the other benefit of this is that there could be an understanding that, hey, I've lent you this money. I don't expect I'll ever need it, but if I do run into some health issues and I do need that money, I will call back the loan. So that's the other side of it. So you can still protect yourself and your family.
Now, we did talk about RIFs previously, and you did mention that taxes need to be paid on RIFs in an estate. Mm-hmm. Is there a way of avoiding taxes with paying those taxes? I know if you've named a beneficiary, it doesn't go into probate, but you still have, the estate still has to pay the tax on whatever value the RIF has.
Yeah, well, yes. So the estate does have to pay what is the equivalent tax liability on that RIF on death. That's right. The only way to avoid that is to pass it on to your spouse. Okay. And that's basically the only
that's
other way
it.
To
put it. Mm-hmm. Or you have them co-own the RIF. Is that possible?
No, you can't share the ownership of a RIF.
You can't share that either. Huh? So there's really no tax avoidance.
Well, you could always remarry and have another spouse. That's not usually part of our financial planning, though.
Okay. I won't think about that. Do we need help with our estates? If you have accumulated something, maybe it's not large, but you have something, do we need help to make an estate plan?
Yes, I really do think, in fact, I'll be honest with you, when we sit down and do our meetings with our clients, we probably spend more time focused on their estate plan than their investments. As Canadians, and I don't think we're unique, was we don't do enough to ensure that everything that we've worked hard for, earned and saved, is transferred the way we want to. So it is important that you review and update your will Once every 5 years, at least, or of course, when something changes in
changes.
So that's an important thing. Power of attorney. That's more important than a will. Someone there to look after you when you're not well and you can't look after your financial or health decisions. That's critical. One of the things that I think is important is that if you're comfortable with it, communicate to your beneficiaries, who are usually your children, what your estate planning wishes are, so that there's no misunderstanding after you're gone. Because what we've seen with clients and their families is they disintegrate after the parents pass away because the parents have not clearly articulated or communicated what their plans are. And we've seen families torn apart over a piece of art. The daughter thought the mother promised it to her, and the son said, no, he promised it to me. And the families who the parents have spent a lifetime keeping together are torn apart the moment they leave. So that's where I think people need to spend more time and focus on this sort of thing.
Yeah, I imagine those are hard conversations to have with your children. I can certainly remember my parents or my mother having those conversations with me, and my comments were always, "Mom, spend all your money. Don't worry about me. I can get a job. I'll be fine." But she didn't. And I'm thankful that she didn't. It just worked out really well for me that she left me some inheritance. But it's a very hard conversation. I didn't want to discuss it with my mom.
Yeah, so you're not alone. That's the response most children have. So what we offer our clients is something called a family meeting. So we know that these conversations have to take place. We know that they're often conversations that are hard to have. But if we are organizing that conversation through a family meeting, everything is put on the table. Everything that the client wants put on the table is put on the table. It's documented and it's shared. And to me, that is probably one of the most important services that we have. It's the most important things that you can do as a parent is to communicate with your family. These are my wishes. This is how I want to be remembered. This is how I want my assets shared. And this is where I want that teapot to go. And that piece of art, and we ask clients to actually document a letter of wishes where they want those kinds of items to go. It's a document that stands beside the will. It's not enforceable, but when it's shared by all the family members, it's a pretty hard thing to go against.
Yeah, that's interesting.
We'll return to our interview right after these messages. You're listening to Aging, a New Reality on Northumberland 89.7. And now we return to Madeline Corelli and her guest, Gord Lay.
How about power of attorney and executors? What can you explain their role and how we find them? Like, who do we pick?
Yeah, that is the number one question now. So power of attorney, just to remind you, is for when you're alive, but you're assigning the responsibility of someone making decisions for you financially, looking after your bills and so on, and also some of the health decisions that may arise. Mm-hmm. So you want someone who's obviously of sound mind. Generally speaking, you want someone who's cares for you and is compassionate. So hopefully that's one of your family members, but also someone, if it's not your spouse, someone who's younger than you. Okay. Mm-hmm. You don't want a 95-year-old looking after an 80-year-old's issues. Mm-hmm. So that's the power of attorney. And often the executor's characteristics are similar, except the executor's role is a little different. Executor's role is there to basically enforce the terms of the will or make sure that they're followed. And the executor role is becoming quite onerous now, and there are some legal responsibilities around it. So there is some risk there too as an executor if you don't handle things properly, filing the taxes properly, making sure that's making sure that all the goods are valued properly for probate and then settling the estate and selling those physical assets. Again, if a family member, a responsible family member, can fill that role, that's great. If you have a friend who also fill that role, it would have to be a very good friend because it's a huge responsibility. But also you could hire a professional trustee. And that's where, you know, the banks all have professional trustees, and they could act as your executor, also do your power of attorney for finance, or they could be a co-executor. So they could stand beside someone else, a family member, and help them with the decisions that have to be made and things that need to be executed. And quite frankly, more and more people are going that way. And quite frankly, that's what I've done for my estate, is I have our trustee working along with my daughter, and I have a family of four children, to make sure that things are handled properly, fairly, and equitably.
That's probably a really good idea, I would think. Obviously, if you have a sizable estate, it's imperative that somebody outside of the family is also involved, I would think, just for good advice. If you have a fairly small estate, maybe your child or children can handle it themselves. But as you said, there are loopholes that have to be gone through and juggled, that you have to meet tax deadlines and estate deadlines, and as well as funeral plans. And, you know, there's so much to think about.
There really is. There's a lot of responsibility there. And generally speaking, our experience is that we just had an estate, a sizable estate, three children, three executors, three beneficiaries. And each child took on a responsibility based on their strengths. And that worked out okay, but there's still some animosity between them. And you're going to get that. Sometimes having someone outside of that family circle who's somewhat impartial could really save the day and save the family relationship.
Good point. Really good point. It's not pleasant territory to discuss with your family, and it's not pleasant territory for them when you die. It becomes very treacherous, I think, because I don't know about you, but I don't read tax law. I find it incredibly confusing and boring. So how many people sit down with their accountant even and talk about tax laws on your death? Probably not.
You're right. Most accountants really don't have the time to do it, and they would charge for it. And that's where the family meeting, that idea of the family meeting, comes out, because all of those questions are answered. You know, mm-hmm. They're not difficult questions. They're questions that are asked all the time. Mm-hmm. And that's where we answer those questions. And quite honestly, it's such a sense of relief that everyone has after those meetings, because nobody wanted to do the meeting. Nobody wanted to ask the questions, but everybody had those questions, if you know what I mean.
Yeah. And now you did mention a will, that a will is really important, and we should look at redoing it either every 5 years or when whatever circumstances in your life have changed. How do you handle that? You must have a lawyer to do a will?
Have to have a lawyer. You can do your own will. And if for some people, if your estate is fairly simple and straightforward, you can do that yourself. There are sources on the internet and so on. But generally speaking, the cost of a will is not overwhelming. And the advice that you get that surrounds the will is, in many respects, priceless.
Yes.
So I do always recommend that you hire a professional and get it done properly. And then if you do need to make changes down the road, sometimes it's just a matter of just writing in a codicil to the will. You don't have to rewrite the whole thing.
You just maybe change a piece of it that's reflecting
right.
The change that has occurred.
Exactly.
And I guess we've talked about probate, so I don't want to ask you about probate again, but it seems to me to be a massive, huge problem that we have to go through, that, you know, the government says, and it's kind of like an inheritance tax, isn't it? You know, that they don't call it that because that's a scary thought, but they call it probate, in that this is the time when your estate must finalize itself to pay the taxes owing, or, you know, release the money to whomever you have designated as the beneficiary. Is probate something that we need to be afraid of?
No, but it is something that you need to ask about, because as we've talked about, there are strategies to avoid probate, you know, and investors or individuals, families who have a higher net worth, they could set up trusts, they could set up corporations, and those are ways to, or holding companies, that's ways to avoid probate. But all those things come at a cost as well. So people have to keep in mind that the cost is 1.5%. Some people will spend 5% in fees trying to avoid that 1.5% tax. So you really need to set back and look at this sensibly. We live in Canada, we pay a lot in taxes, but we enjoy the benefits of what our system offers. So sometimes there's just no avoiding it.
That's true. Death and taxes, not too much mm-hmm. you can do about either, right? You know, Gord, this has been so interesting and informative, and I hope our listeners really understand a little better the importance of making a will, talking to someone about their estate, and making decisions with someone who understands estate planning mm-hmm. and really has figured this out before anything happens where they no longer have control and somebody else takes over and maybe their wishes are not fulfilled. So you've made really good points about the importance of estate planning. And I think that those are extremely interesting for me as well, but for our listeners to really understand how critical this piece of information is and the process and how complex the process could be.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's my pleasure sharing that. They're great questions and we can't talk about it enough.
Thank you. I agree. We cannot talk about it enough. We should do more programming like this so that people can hear it, because sometimes it takes 5 or 6 times before you kind of register that, oh, maybe I should be thinking about this, right?
That's right. Mm-hmm.
Thank you so much, Gord. This has been a wonderful interview. I have enjoyed it tremendously, and I appreciate the time and the expertise that you've provided for us.
My pleasure. Thanks very much, Madeline, for doing this.
Thank you.
Okay.
You have been listening to Madeline Corelli talking with Gord Lay of the Lay Wealth Management Group. Be sure to listen next week at this time when Madeline will be in conversation with another expert on a topic that will help us deal with aging, a new reality, right here on Northumberland 89.7, truly local radio. Interviews in this series are conducted by Madeline Corelli, technical assistance by Trevor Joyce, production by Kevin Stewart, Olivia Waldrop, and Paige Johnston. Executive producer is Barry Walker. The preceding program has been a co-production of Northumberland 89.7 FM and the Community Training and Development Centre.